Shut up and sit down.
What's going on, guys? This is the MMA Complex. My name is Josh.
And I'm James.
We're back. Brand new episode. It is March 31st, at the end of the month of March, quarantine. Heading into April, looks like we're going to be on quarantine, at least here in LA. I don't know how you guys are, wherever you're listening or watching. We're stuck in quarantine till at least the end of April. So this will look like it's going to be our life for at least a little while longer. I don't mind it too much. I know you're still in the middle of it. You work in the medical field, so you're still kind of like working and doing your thing. I'm at home trying to make the best of it.
I wish I could be home, but I can't.
I don't mind it. I kind of enjoy it. I'm enjoying it.
It sucks like going to work and like it just sucks.
Just being there, being at work, being around things. Like, how do you feel? Are you nervous when you get up? Are you nervous when you get home?
I mean,
you're more cautious now.
I'm cautious. Like I make sure I wash my hands. I wear gloves when I go outside. I wear a mask. I make sure like I'm very, you know, because I have a 6-month-old niece at home. So, but as far as me being like paranoid over it, not really. I'd rather be home just because I want to sleep in.
Yeah.
I have to wake up super early in the morning and deal with these savages at work.
Yeah.
Especially ones who are uber paranoid about everything.
Yeah.
I see the same old lady like 2 times a week. She says that she has a coronavirus. We keep telling her no, go home.
But I've seen one of those. I went to go to get checked one time. The last time I went to go, when I got to go get checked, and there was a lady in front of me, and she was like just... She was telling the workers there, like, oh, can you use a different pen? You grab that pen when you're helping the other lady. Can you use a different thingy? God. Because I want a brand new one. Blah, blah, blah. She was, like, super paranoid. And they kind of sent her on her way. They're like, okay, lady.
Yeah. I mean, if you're going to get it, you're going to get it. But
you get a lot of crazies.
A lot of crazies. Yeah. And I seen it happen. Every day I went, it's crazy.
Yeah. I think they're doing a good job, at least from what I could see. They're asking questions, and they're asking a lot of questions. And if they don't seem that, like they're not answering the right stuff, they'll pass them to a certain, you know, maybe like a phone operator, and then they can discuss things further.
So it's pretty much like screening.
They screened them pretty good. From what I could see, they were screening pretty good.
Yeah. Did you notice that Beverly Hospital had the tents outside?
No, I haven't seen it.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I pass by there, but I don't really pay attention to what's out there.
There's like tents outside because they're running out of space.
I mean, from what we see, man, it's like I know it's getting worse, I guess.
We haven't reached the peak. I think the peak is like in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, they're saying that the peak of infections and death are going to be somewhere late to mid April. Hopefully it's not, and then it's going to start to die down after that time. But I know that National Guard's already there. They're kind of assisting with stuff. They're taking a lot of the load off from. I thought they were gonna like, they're opening these like the convention center is being used. The naval ships are being used, but I thought they were gonna be like over flooding. We're gonna expect a bunch of freaking people and sick and dead or whatever. But I think they're just taking a lot of the patients out of the hospitals.
Yeah, which is a good
freeing
thing.
Up a lot of shit.
It's not like New York where they have like so many dead bodies and they gotta like throw them in the truck.
It's everywhere though. Like I know, I'm pretty sure I don't know how you feel seeing it. I get a quick little information and then I'm good for the day.
I don't consume myself because
I try not to consume. Yeah,
because if I do, I get all paranoid, I start overthinking things. I just like watch it for like I just read a quick update, one quick update a day. Yeah. That's it.
I'm a little sick of coronavirus at this point, but we still have quite a bit to go. So I have to. It's just what life is now. So
I'm just grateful that I haven't been hit, or either one of us have been hit.
Hopefully, we're staying home. We haven't really had a lot of people over. The only person I come in contact really is you.
Yeah.
My mom. They go out to like Walmart or Target or whatever. So you can easily catch it wherever. As long as you're careful, wash your hands, hand sanitizer if you got it.
I do both.
You do what you can, I guess.
I carry sanitizer with me at all times.
Yeah.
I carry gloves with me at all times too. So.
You do what you can. So, All right, let's get off coronavirus. It's going to be an ongoing thing. We got to give you guys an update. But other than that, we've been, you know, I've been doing what we can to keep ourselves busy and get through this thing together. But John Jones finally emerges. Get right to the MMA stuff. We have John Jones pleading guilty for the charges. Second DWI. I didn't catch the video. Did you watch the video footage?
No. So everything I'm learning is from you right now.
Okay. I didn't watch any of the video footage. They had like a body cam.
Oh, the body cam. Yeah.
You watched the body cam?
Yeah, I watched it.
I haven't watched it.
Yeah, I watched it.
I didn't really feel the need to watch it.
I didn't want to see John Jones be an idiot.
Yeah, I didn't.
I was curious.
I didn't feel the need to watch it. I kind of got the idea of what it entailed, but what break it down, I guess.
I mean, I did it on a fast forwarding. So the police officer came to his car and
which on a side note, I heard that this is the third time or whatever that this certain police officer has arrested him.
Oh, geez, that's not good.
Or has had in contact with John Jones. Either he's got it out for John Jones or just by chance. Maybe it's because of Albuquerque.
Yeah.
This guy runs into John Jones a lot.
That is kind of weird.
Yeah. He's got, there are stuff coming out about the cop. I don't know if it's true or not, but he's under investigation for kind of racial discrimination stuff. So,
well, if he
on
is,
a side note,
if he is, he was really professional in my opinion. He wasn't being aggressive or he wasn't assuming.
No, you're definitely your
body cam is on.
So you better.
On your best
behavior. You're dealing with John Jones, so.
But no, he asked John Jones. You know, straightforward questions like, have you been drinking? And John Jones said yes. And kudos to John Jones. He didn't lie. And he was straight up to the cop. And he told him what was going on. And the police officer just requested another unit to come down to give him a DUI test. He asked John to come out. It seemed that John Jones was... He knew he was going to fail. It seemed like his body language seemed like some of the stuff they've had him do. He asked the officer twice, like, oh, do I do this?
Did he mention something about homeless people? I heard that he mentioned something about homeless
people. Yeah, he said that because he asked him what he was doing out so late. He goes, oh, I was just out here giving homeless people some food. Like in the sometimes. Yeah, 1 in the morning. The funny thing is that John Jones did a post saying stay home. Because one thing you can't fuck up is that's, you know, stay home. And he does the same shit.
Now, he came out with a statement. He pled guilty, and I'll read his statement real quick.
Was there any jail time, or is that going to happen?
No, no. I think he got house arrest for 4 days.
Of course.
He got... I mean, I didn't think nothing was going to happen anyway. I mean, it's
only because the last time, in 2016, the judge told John Jones, I better not see you here. Yeah, my courtroom again.
It's 4 days house arrest, 1 year supervised probation, 90 days of outpatient therapy, and fined $500. That's
John Jones' best case scenario.
That's best case scenario. Nothing.
That's nothing.
And actually, a lot of his shit is good. The house arrest, good.
Yeah.
1 year supervised probation. Good. He needs a babysitter.
Yeah.
And then 90 days outpatient therapy. Good, because he fucking needs it. He needs that therapy. So, I mean, all positive, I guess.
No, do you see him from it? Do you see him fucking up within the year?
No, I think he'll be good the rest of the year.
Yeah.
I think he'll be good the rest of the year. After the rest of that year? I don't know.
Like once
all this shit's up?
Expires?
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. Hopefully, by that time, he's going to be in his...
He's
already in his early 30s.
Yeah.
You know, we'll see. He's 32. I mean, he'll be 33.
He's living his own 30 for 30. Because, you know.
We're seeing it all play out right
now.
Yeah. Or like when the movie comes out or the documentary comes out, we're going to be like, oh, we know the story.
Yeah.
We fucking know.
He's like a Lawrence Taylor, like a Daryl Strawberry, like those guys who are great athletes, but outside their profession, they're a bunch of drug addicts and fuck ups.
So his statement, I'm going to break it down in a nutshell because it's got like two paragraphs here. While I work to understand and cope with stress and uncertainties, I'm truly disappointed by the negative headlines. I accept full responsibility. I let down a lot of people, blah, blah, blah. I accept, yeah, for my actions. I know I have personal work to do, which involves my unhealthy relationship I have with alcohol. I've dedicated a lot of time to improve my community. Setbacks, I won't let it stop me. Albuquerque support. Thank you all, blah, blah, blah.
Bullshit.
So. Yeah, when I hear that, I just roll my eyes because it's just like
it's the same
it's just
shit.
PR.
Like, yeah, it's just PR. I mean, obviously, it's the most truth I've seen from him, especially the statement that says, "I know that I have some personal work to do, which involves the unhealthy relationship I have with alcohol." That's probably the most honest statement that he's put out.
Yeah,
ever. For he acknowledges course. That he's got an unhealthy problem before, even with the Ariel's. Sit down with him. He was like, no, I'm good. I could have a drink or two. I still have a drink or two. This is the first time where he acknowledges he has a problem.
Well, because because he has to do it.
Yeah. So, but I mean, I've never seen
because he wouldn't admit it if he didn't get caught.
Uh-huh.
So, I don't. I just want my like everybody else, and you know, actions speak louder than words. So, mm-hmm. We've heard this shit, the same statement for the past how many times, and since he. He fucked it the first time. So,
and what do you think about all the people that have come out talking shit about him?
I mean, you can't blame him.
John McCarthy, who was one straight out fuck up. Bunch of other people go down the list. I mean, there's some people that like Valentino Shevchenko who put out a tweet, you know, saying that he's an honorable man, blah blah blah. He'll bounce back. But and other people are just been just. Going at him.
I mean,
especially Diego. Did you see Diego's statement? Diego was like, I don't know, but I don't remember what the wording was.
He was like criticizing him because he called himself a religious person.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, but I mean, you can't blame the people who criticize him. I mean, once you have a platform like John Jones and you're a fighter and you say things but do the complete opposite,
mm-hmm.
Of course your peers are gonna criticize you because. I think not only his peers, but fans of MMA around the world kind of feel the same way.
Yeah. Yeah. Diego also is the one that just came out saying that he doesn't believe that CTE is real. So.
CTE?
CTE is real.
Is it real?
No.
Well, he has CTE.
Yeah.
Yeah. Especially him. Like, he's been hit in the head too many times.
Especially him. I don't see his story ending well.
No,
he's
another 30 for 30.
His 30 for 30. I don't think has even started yet.
I think with him it'll end tragically in some way
because
not necessarily death, but in a tragic way.
You don't with Diego. You just never know. The guy's so
unpredictable
and so out there that I know he cares about God. He cares about his family, which. Leaves me to believe I don't think I see anything of him doing anything crazy. Now BJ is a little bit more destructive. Like I don't see it. I don't know. Maybe not. I just don't see him. I think I see him just fighting wherever the fuck he can until he's 50.
60. I see that too. Yeah. You know, I see him like getting knocked out like six times and then going to like,
yeah, I think it's more so that instead of destructive, behaviors like BJ, who could possibly also have CTE, which most likely he does. I see it more of definitely with Diego issues with CTE.
Yeah,
down the road.
He's been doing it since 2005. That's crazy.
And he's not like other guys like Dan Severin or Ken Shamrock, who they took a lot of hits, but.
But Diego's career is based on getting hit.
Yeah, Diego has. Yeah, he made a career based on how much punishment he can dish out and take.
Yeah,
you know, it's different. That's
never good. Yeah,
yeah. I think I see his story. Yeah, I don't think it started yet with him. Yeah. But yeah, that's John Jones. I don't know what to make of it. I mean, it is what it is. We'll see how it unfolds. I don't see it. The UFC is going to really make that much of a statement on this.
No,
they led it to in. The hands of the law enforcement authorities. Yeah. The fight's probably with Dominic Reyes is probably still going to go on whenever they can do it, and which probably be end of summer, and then that's pretty much it. That's we're done. You know, they already gave him a sentence, which is quick. I didn't expect it to be this quick. He put out a statement. That's it. Let's all get back to coronavirus life. Another topic that came up recently is the fact that UFC 249, right, is, I don't know what the hell is going on with this now, because Khabib is stuck in Russia. He came out, went on Instagram, I believe, and said that the country's on lockdown. Everybody's on lockdown. He can't leave. He can't do anything. UFC is already looking to replace him and still go ahead with the event.
That makes no sense at all.
And Justin Gaethje being the number one, pick to replace him against Ferguson.
I think that's the stupidest move by the UFC. I think I don't know why the UFC can't just wait it out.
Just wait it out. Just wait 2 months.
Yeah. Dana. Dana wants to prove a point that he can still make a fight.
And he even said, like, unless there's a countrywide shutdown and flights and no one could get out of it, like, then, yeah. But
it's a sign.
It's already happening. Khabib can't leave the country. Like, you can't
go. And why even jeopardize a fight with Khabib and Ferguson? Like, what if Gaethje does fight him? And then what if Gaethje wins or badly hurts Tony?
Yeah.
Then that fight is gone.
You know that fight with Tony and Gaethje is not going to go.
No.
Like, no one's gonna get damaged. Like, and also, who's going to get damaged? Both of them, probably.
Yeah. Yeah.
Seriously damaged?
Not just that, but Gaethje's not even the household name.
I know. Like, I wouldn't mind seeing it.
For the hardcores, fuck y'all, watch it. But you see Ferguson and Gaethje. I mean, Ferguson's barely a household name.
Yeah.
Yeah, those two guys as the main event? No. Have Gaethje fight Conor and put Ferguson against Khabib.
Like, I don't know. I don't get it.
Though. I don't get the logic behind. I think it's just more of a pride thing. I think Daniel just wants to prove a point.
Is it a pride thing? Is it a financial thing?
I think it's a little bit of both, man, because why in the fuck would you put this fight on? It makes no sense.
And do you expect to get $60 to $70 from people's pockets?
Especially,
right now?
Especially like in the hard recession that we're going through. People, like, a lot of the country is not even working.
And how can you even ask people to train when, like, you're barely even, can you even put on a card? Or are they going to have the best? Are you going to get the best out of your fighters in a situation like this?
Yeah. That and the UFC kind of like relies on revenue.
Mm-hmm.
Not going to be anybody in the fucking arena.
No, there's no arena.
So what money are you going to make? Are you depending on that pay-per-view money to come in?
And why not just let ESPN go through your library and just...
They did it last week.
Yeah, just do it last week. Like, you hit a full marathon, go through all, like, Put some of your latest events out for free on ESPN, which I think they did already.
Yeah.
But do that Friday, Saturday nights. Have that going on. Do your Pride weekend, Pride FC weekend.
Yeah.
Do
a marathon of fights you must watch.
Yeah.
Their library and the promotions that are in their library are endless. I don't know what's the need for them to rush for a fight to save a card that A, zero audience.
Yeah.
And B, you're just wasting these fights.
Yeah.
On nothing.
Yeah, I don't get it. I don't understand it. I don't see the desperation. I don't know why. It's desperation. It's either financial or it's pride. It's probably both. And it's like, you're definitely not going to get the best product that you can get. And you're going to put people in danger and you're just going to go through a bunch of headache and stress. And for what? Just give people a future date.
Yeah.
June. Let's do June or no, July. Let's do July for sure. July. You can start live events, plan that. And then maybe one in June, just in case. We'll do one in June, but end of June. And then there you go. You have something to look forward to. We're in April right now. LA and California and everything, the US is in straight up lockdown until the end of April.
Yeah. Practically globally. Huh?
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't get it. I don't understand it.
You see the NBA still in lockdown.
I'm waiting. I'm hoping that Dana comes out and just says that we're postponing it. We're waiting. And definitely we're going to figure this out once it all clears up and we can kind of have an idea of when it's going to, we can do an event. We're going to set a date and then there you go. That's it.
Yeah.
It may not be Tony and Khabib right away, We might have to do that in September, but or just plan that for September right now. Fuck it.
Yeah.
You know?
I agree.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy all the stuff that's going on. Dana hasn't been, you know, has been pretty quiet lately, you know.
Very stubborn too.
What else are we gonna get to? We said we were gonna break down the Chris Benoit Vice documentary, two part documentary that they had on Vice, and they put it up on YouTube. Part one. I mean, you want to do part one? Should we do it all? Just give a nutshell just of what our thoughts on the whole thing.
I mean, we can do everything.
Yeah, we'll do everything, huh? Yeah. So the first part was a lot of positive, I would say. If for the most part,
yeah,
you had...
It's details like Eddie Guerrero's death.
Yeah.
And pretty much Chris Benoit's origin story.
And they did a really good job in terms of giving you the overall take on... I don't think they left really anything off the table.
No, they did a great job highlighting Benoit's like early career.
His early career in
New Japan. How he got into wrestling.
Yeah, his move from WCW
to WWE.
To WWE. The problems that he had with in terms of main eventing because it was a smaller guy.
Yeah.
His relationship with Eddie Guerrero, their overall careers and how they progressed, the highs, the lows, everything. The drug abuse, steroid abuse, their family, their backgrounds, just everything. They did a really, really, really good job.
Because it was always Eddie Guerrero, Benoit, Jericho, and Chavo, who were like really, really super close. And I appreciated in the first part how they told the audience, you know, how close those guys were, especially Benoit and Eddie. Yeah. And, you know, both guys who were big in Japan, but in the States, it's not so much your technique, it's more your size.
Yeah.
Guys like Hogan, guys like Goldberg, Ultimate Warrior, those guys got pushed.
Yeah,
because they're the smaller guys, you know, were the curtain jerkers. You know, the first, you know, like guys his size usually got the IC belt, Intercontinental belt, at best.
At best. That was the height of your,
Yeah, until Bret Hart kind of changed the game. In the late 90s, 97, in the late 90s, where he became the world champion. Mm-hmm. But even then, you know, Brock came in and he was still getting pushed. Like, the guy that thought getting pushed, Benoit finally gets it. He gets the push, so does Eddie Guerrero. So it kind of shows you, like, these two guys who were fighting for position because they were small finally made it to the biggest show, which is WrestleMania, and both came out on top.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought. Because if you're not a familiar with Chris Benoit or pro wrestling all that much, this documentary could have easily just focused on the negative.
Yeah,
that gave you a background of his early career, went straight into like the relationship, and then the negative.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. But they gave you everything. They gave you, you know, his wife with Nancy. You gave her background. Mm. You gave the kids. His son was a part of the documentary. Dean Malenko was a part of the documentary. They had all the right people. Jericho was a big part of the documentary. Chavo, what's her name? Eddie Guerrero's wife was a part of the documentary. So a lot of the right people were a part of the documentary. Jim Ross was there. And they gave you the full background. They gave you because if you paid attention to the news at the time or even like, you know, the story afterwards, it was all just negative, who he was, and the negative. And then they didn't touch on how Eddie Guerrero's death kind of
broke Benoit.
He had pushed him off the edge.
Yeah.
Yeah, it pushed him over.
Yeah, because, you know, the media always looked at wrestling. I mean, always gave pro wrestling a bad state.
Like a bad, like they brushed it aside. It was just like carnival act. It was a dark light.
Stigma. And that's why, like, we just people that watched, like,
CNN, we knew about it.
We knew about it, but people who weren't fans, you know, they kind of just put the stigma like these guys, just guys who are like carnival workers that use steroids or whatever.
Yeah, and
then they labeled it as road rage on the media.
Media went with road rage.
Yeah.
Which I'm sure CTE, roid rage, it wasn't just one thing. It was, you know, emotional and, you know, issues. It was depression.
Yeah, emotional distress.
Emotional distress. It was the death of Eddie. It was roid rage. It was CTE. It was, I think you would have to take everything into account for what he ended up doing and also his own decision.
Yeah.
If you don't know the story, if you haven't seen the documentary, if you don't even know who Chris Benoit is, one of the greatest in-ring performers of all time. Like even Jericho, which I always felt that growing up too, watching him was that like he was one of those guys that like just was one of the most believable performers.
Yeah.
Made it seem like it wasn't staged. Like when you got in there, like it looked like as real as you could possibly make it. Like he put his selling, like,
yeah,
as a performer selling it, one of the best. Like just like when he would hit a kitchen sink knee, like, and he, the way he put in his like energy into it.
I love the
bumps, everything.
Yeah, everything. I think my top three moves that he did besides his crossface was the snap suplex. I love that. His German suplex and his knife edge chops.
Yeah. Yeah. Those
were awesome. And like his
clothesline.
His clothesline. Yeah. But you know what? He was trained by the Hart family.
Yeah.
But if you watch any wrestler that was trained by the Harts, anytime they pin someone, they never hook their leg. They always just kind of just pinned them with that hook in the leg, which was kind of weird.
And right. even the crossface, when he would sell the crossface,
yeah,
just everything. When he did the
head, I love his music.
His music was the best. When you do the headbutt, and he would right away cover up like he hurt himself, his in-ring performance, and when, like, I always love those guys like Chris Benoit, Dean Malenko, Lance Storm,
Jericho,
Bret Hart. Even as for a big guy, Triple H was always one of my in-ring favorite in-ring performers. What did they call him? He's a master. I don't know. It's almost like a master technician. I don't know what did they call him. I know. Bret Hart was like the excellence of execution.
Yeah.
But JR used to say something about Triple H. I don't know. But as a big guy, I always loved Triple H's in-ring work. But Chris Benoit,
the Benoit Angle rivalry.
Yeah,
some of the best matches.
Yeah,
especially that cage match with I think it was on SmackDown when Benoit jumped the cage and he like fell and did the flying headbutt from top of the cage.
Yeah,
that was insane.
And even just like how Chris Benoit was not a collegiate wrestler or an Olympic wrestler.
That's just crazy.
But they worked on it so much, and they sold it so well that like you felt like Chris Benoit could somehow physically was able to compete with Kurt Angle, who was an Olympic wrestler.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They had these scrambles. They would go transition a suplex each other, and then just like it was just crazy.
You know, Benoit versus Bret Hart for the Owen Hart tribute match was awesome too.
Awesome, yeah.
And like I used to love his tights, the one that said Crippler and the little like rips on the leg. The
rips on the side, yeah. It was almost like
love.
Wolverine-ish. Which that was his nickname, Rabbit Wolverine or the Crippler.
And on his ass had the Crippler on his ass. I used to love his tights.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he was one of my favorites, and I don't think outside people watching this documentary or like were even at the time were able to like process it and feel any remorse for the guy. They just automatically wrote him off and seen him as this big monster and this jerk, this asshole that fucking killed his family and this, you know, this nothing that kind of was just a this monster. And not condoning what he did. What he did was probably the worst thing you can ever do.
Dude, he strangled his wife so hard that he broke her back.
He broke her back. Details of the death. Damn. Or another thing. So the first part of the documentary, they go into his story, his career, the highlights, the lows, his relationship with wrestling, his family, Eddie, all that. They go into the death of Eddie, how that sent him over the edge, everything. And then on the part two was mainly the murder and then the investigation and the aftermath mm-hmm. and everything that followed.
Yeah.
It was crazy. I mean, and if you taking, you know, obviously as a fan of his and watching wrestling, especially during that time, but when, you know, his career and the highlights of his career, the big times of his career, it's hard to separate the guy from the performer and what he did. For me, I it's a tragic story. I can separate the two. I can still, like, when I can still see why they probably won't allow him in the Hall of Fame. I can see why they kind of don't really acknowledge him too much in WWE anymore, because it's probably the worst ending to somebody's career or life you can really imagine.
Yeah.
Not to his own life, but his family. I can see why. Now I also can see how you can also still acknowledge the guy's existence, you know, without praising him, at least, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. I know this, you're saying in the library on WWE Network, they still have his matches. He's still on pay-per-views or broadcast.
Yeah. I guess replays. Like you can pretty much watch any Benoit match,
but you can't search him individually.
It might be different now. I haven't been on there yet. I mean, lately, but you can watch even Benoit's WCW days.
You can watch him on there.
Yeah, you can watch anything with Benoit on the network.
Yeah, because I know. So, yeah, they even bring it up where, like, speaking his name was
like taboo.
No, it was taboo.
Yeah, but yeah, you can still watch him on the WCW network, makes no sense. But
and the details of the murder, they go into detail. They go into the fact that he called people, you know. During that time, during that weekend, so it started on a Friday, ended on a Sunday, basically. It was a 3-day thing.
Yeah,
killed his wife.
Right.
Killed his son. Killed himself.
Yeah.
His wife strangled. Oof. They even added details. I didn't even know where he literally, like, pinned her down, choked her, broke her back. Like, really, like, brutal murder of his wife.
Jeez.
Definitely, there was emotions, anger involved in that death.
Yeah.
You know, she was in the room, his son was in another room. I'm sure he kept the two away from each other because his son didn't die until Saturday.
Yeah, so he had his wife's body.
His wife's body was in the house
all night.
All weekend.
All weekend, yeah.
Yeah. And even that past that, once he killed himself, because they didn't find him till days later when they it was that day, actually, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Because they had an event that weekend.
Yeah.
So they did a wellness check. They asked the police, WB called, asked the police to do a wellness check because it was almost event time and he wasn't there yet. He killed his wife.
Yeah.
Then Saturday, which I guess it's... Okay, so he suffocated his son.
Well, first he gave his son a Xanax.
But yeah, that's one thing I didn't really know. There's some details I got from it was that I didn't know beforehand was that he gave him a Xanax.
Knocked
him out. I guess the positive you can take away from that is his son didn't suffer.
No.
So he suffocated his son while he was asleep, passed out on like probably a full pill of Xanax, full dose of Xanax.
Yeah. But can you imagine, like,
I can't even,
like, no. Giving your son a pill, knowing why you're giving him a pill.
Knowing what you're going to do.
Yeah. Knowing why you're going to give him that pill because you want to kill him.
Yeah.
Which, why even do that at that point? Like, what the fuck did his son do to you? Like,
I think
he knew he was fucked.
I think he knew he was going to kill his son. It was either planned, pre-planned, right? It was definitely pre-planned in some way.
Yeah.
Or maybe it wasn't. Maybe it wasn't. I don't know. But, so that would happen Saturday, and he didn't kill himself until Sunday. And now the details are that he researched ways
to break your neck as fast as...
Yeah, he researched ways to kill himself, which leads me to believe that he didn't really plan this way ahead of time.
Well, before that, he was contemplating whether to show up to the show or not.
Yeah, he was even considering showing up to the show. And then he ended up killing himself in his gym, hanging himself on one of the like the weight rack. So yeah. I think it was, you know, the bar, you know, where you can the pull down bar.
Yeah.
So he took off the bar, wrapped it, everything around his neck, locked it, and then pulled the pin on the heaviest portion, heaviest setting. I think it was like
240,
and then released it, and then it fucking broke his neck.
Jesus
Christ. Which couldn't happen right away. I think it was like, knowing how strong he was,
yeah,
I'm sure he put up a little bit of a fight.
His neck was strong, right?
Yeah, and he probably suffocated by the time it really, really broke. So like,
so when you put that pin,
or who knows, 240 pounds,
that's a lot.
Maybe it fucking broke his neck right away. I don't know.
So he put the pin out and the weights dropped. Lifted?
I think he.
So he was standing up, right, when he was doing this. He pulled the pin in and it made him sit down because the cops found him sitting down.
Found him sitting down.
But I guess he was like this.
I don't know how you would do it. How would you do it though? Because you have to pull the pill down to lift the weight up.
Yeah, then he put it around his neck, and then he.
So was he able to pull the 240 down? Wrapped it around.
I think he. What you said the first time was right. Like, it was no weight. Put it around his neck, easy. Put the pin at 240, right? And then took out the pin and the 240 went up.
Yeah.
Yeah, right? Or the opposite? I don't know.
But it broke his neck. The opposite. I don't know.
Not down, but up, right?
But up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
And then that was it. And then they found him later that day, I think, right? Or the next day.
Like on that. Sunday.
Yeah. Tragic end, tragic story, tragic everything. Yeah, I could, me being a father, I couldn't imagine ever getting to a point like that, which leads me to believe that it's not just depression, it's everything. You have to take everything into account what went down with this guy.
Well, he was writing, he had a journal.
And he had a journal, yes.
That said that he had dreams and he wrote it down that he felt like a religious group was after him and his family.
Yeah, he was. I think before that, yeah, the documentary touches on it, where he felt like he was getting more and more paranoid.
Yeah.
In the weeks leading up.
Yeah.
Or at least the weeks, the months, whatever, leading up to it, where he was getting more and more paranoid. Like
he would take different routes to the gym.
Yeah, he felt like people were after him, people were watching him, people were like following him. And do you remember hearing the conspiracy theories about that he was killed? Do you remember hearing those?
Yeah, by Sullivan. Nancy's ex-husband.
Yeah. Oh, I don't know. It was he was associated with it.
That's what I heard. Yeah,
and I heard that there was a 911 call, like even before the cops even were on the
scene. Oh yeah, I don't know about that one too.
No, there was that. I heard that there was a call to a 911 regarding that situation before the cops were even aware of it, or like before anybody was aware of it. So I heard that too.
Do you think it was a suicide, or do you think he got murdered?
The conspiracy is that he was murdered. That was a conspiracy. And remember that maybe I don't know. I mean, let's go down conspiracy theory road. Let's say his paranoia was valid. Let's say he was being, you know, he
was being followed.
He was being followed. Let's say he was, maybe he was even approached by somebody. Let's say he was, you know, he did start to notice things, and we're just brushing it off as some fucking psychopath that like CTE issues. And maybe he was, you know, but, and maybe the investigation, who knows? It's a small town.
Yeah.
Maybe they didn't really, you know what I mean? You know, some of these small town investigations go. Yeah.
Well then, so
did they fingerprint the doors? Probably not.
Probably not. Yeah. Who knows? But I do know that, when the details of what happened came out, Benoit's parents kind of reached out to a person who does studies for CTE.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and they touched on that.
They tested the brain and found out that his brain was of a really like a 70-year-old, 80-year-old old man.
Yeah, with like dementia or something, or Parkinson's or whatever the fuck. Yeah. And they showed the scans and he had like black spots
all over
like
his brain.
Dead parts of his brain. Yeah. That were just like,
and that's some chair shots. Because after his death, the WWE kind of changed their policies on on the chair shots, they used to be allowed to hit on the head, but now it's only body, not head.
Yeah, they touched on a lot of that. They touched on, I'm telling you, it was a really well done documentary where they touched on even how it changed the game afterwards, where it changed the chair shots, it changed a lot of the damage that a lot of the wrestlers could take. It changed the drug policy in a lot of ways to where they had to like be a little bit more strict. They had to. They can't have any people dying, because he wasn't the only one. During this time, there was Eddie, there was Chris, there was Test,
Hogan. Hogan went he was on trial with Vince.
There were so many freaking wrestlers dying around this time at like 40 years old. Yeah. And there was even there was even I think Sports Illustrated did a really good article, and they had on this one, I forgot what it was. I don't know if I have it still or not. But they went through this whole article of CTE and wrestlers dying at an early age. And they even went back to this like 1993, I think it was a SummerSlam.
Yeah.
And they put the whole card on there, and I think added the 20, I don't know how many wrestlers were on there. More than half of them were dead already.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy. I think back then the average lifespan was like between 40 and 46.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Which is crazy.
Yeah. And so his death, I think, highlighted that. And I think...
It put a bad light in pro wrestling.
It put a bad light in pro wrestling. It took them a while to kind of dig their dig out. And it kind of... It kind of did, right? Because a lot of people. Do you think it changed...
It changed for the worse.
It changed the... It kind of ended the attitude era, right? Yeah. Would you think that was like
in a way? There was
2007 was like the end of like a lot of the. I won't say the attitude era, but you know, the golden era of like wrestling was kind of over.
I think for sure, like it made them change how they do business and how they conduct their matches. It was more kid friendly after that.
Kid friendly after that. Yeah. The wrestlers weren't as big, bulked up, powerhouse wrestlers anymore. It changed.
Oh yeah,
changed things a lot.
And for the fans, I mean, I think his Benoit's death kind of killed the love for pro wrestling for a lot of.
That's basically kind of what killed my love for wrestling. It was his death was kind of like the nail in the coffin for me, because there was a lot of wrestlers dying around that time, and it was kind of like just a normal thing to fucking hear.
Yeah, and then after his death. You know, wrestling did kind of suck.
Yeah. And after
it hasn't recovered since.
After his death, it was like, I was like, okay, I'm out. That's it, man. I can't. All my favorite wrestlers and all the people, like, everybody's just dying. And that one was just like, all right, I think I'm good. Yeah. I'm done. And I don't hate on wrestling. Like, I still, you know, I've gone to local shows in the area. I've gone to the big events a couple of times since then, you know, like a SmackDown or a Raw or something like that. You still follow it regularly. You know, it's not, I'm not completely off it. You know what I mean? Yeah. I still love and appreciate it. Yeah. But it did kind of
save.
Yeah. And it also on a side thing was MMA and the UFC really started to come into like the general public. Around 2004.
Yeah.
So I was already kind of kind of going more in that direction anyway, because I had been, as a fan of mixed martial arts and just fighting in general, I was waiting for that to happen.
Yeah.
So once that became more easily accessible, I kind of just was drifting that way anyway.
Yeah, because I think Benoit died in 2007. 2 years later, 2009, Roger Huerta made the cover of Sports Illustrated.
Yeah, yeah. So by that time, and most of...
It was growing.
For sure. 2004 was like Ultimate Fighter 1. Yeah. So it was like, you know, I was already balls deep in MMA around that time. So
same here.
Man. Yeah,
really good documentary. Though.
Really good documentary. And that's not the only one they put out, huh? They put out a couple since then.
Yeah, I think.
All negative, actually.
Newfound Jack or something. Like Newfound Jack. Season 1 has Bret Hart.
Yeah.
You seen that one?
No, I haven't seen that one.
It's a Montreal Screwjob.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, I did see that one. I did watch that one. Yes, I did. Yes, I did.
But it's the one thing that Brad still talks about.
That's one of the guys I'm glad is still alive. Is Brett?
Yeah, me too.
We nearly lost him from cancer like last year, or year before. So I'm.
And it shrunk not too long
before. Yeah, and I think we missed our chance to go see him in person.
Next time we got to go.
Did he even make the appearance? I don't even know if he made the appearance.
He did, because I saw pictures on Instagram.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I that's one of my guys I need to meet. Because I've seen, I've been to pro wrestling events. I've been lucky enough to see Chris Benoit. I've never met him, but I've seen him up close. So I've gotten to see a lot of the guys. But Bret Hart is one of those guys I really want to meet.
Yeah, me too.
But yeah, it's a great documentary. If you guys haven't caught it, make sure you do.
Yeah, for sure.
That's our show. Let's end it right there. We'll be back next week. Hopefully with some guests. We try to get somebody on here during this quarantine. And if not,
another review.
Okay. We'll review something else. We'll bring something else to you guys and break it down. Until then, catch you guys later.